Welcome to a half hour of Mind Webs. Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. The Mind Web story this time comes from the book The Hugo Winners, Volume 1, edited by Isaac Asimov. This is Avram Davidson's Or All the Seas with Oysters. When the man came into the F&O bike shop, Oscar greeted him with a hearty, "Hi there." And then as he looked closer at the middle-aged visitor with the eyeglasses and business suit, his forehead creased and he began to snap his thick fingers. "I say, I know you, Mr. Name's on the tip of my tongue, doggone it." Oscar was a barrel-chested fellow. He had orange hair. "Why, sure you do," the man said. There was a lion's emblem in his lapel. "Remember you sold me a girl's bicycle with gears for my daughter. We got to talking about that red French racing bike your partner was working on." Oscar slapped his big hand down on the cash register. He raised his head and rolled his eyes up. "Mr. Watney." Mr. Watney beamed. "Ah, sure. Gee, how could I forget? And we went across the street afterward and had a couple of beers, right? Well, how you been, Mr. Watney? I guess the bike, it was an English model, wasn't it? It must have worked out okay, huh? Must have given satisfaction or you would have been back, right?" Mr. Watney said the bicycle was fine, just fine. Then he said, "I understand there's been a change, though. You're all by yourself now. Your partner..." Oscar looked down, pushed his lower lip out, and nodded. "You heard, huh? Yep, I'm all by myself now, over 3 months now." The partnership had come to an end 3 months ago, but it had been faltering long before then. Ferd liked books, long playing records, and high-level conversation. Oscar liked beer, bowling, and women. Any women, any time. The shop was located near the park. It did a big trade in renting bicycles to picnickers. If a woman was barely old enough to be called a woman, and not quite old enough to be called an old woman, or if she was anywhere in between, and if she was alone, Oscar would ask, "How does that machine feel to you, all right?" "Why, I guess so." And taking another bicycle, Oscar would say, "Well, I'll just ride along a little bit with you to make sure. Be right back, Ferd." And Ferd always nodded gloomily. He knew that Oscar would not be right back. Later, Oscar would say, "I hope you made out in the shop as good as I did in the park." "Leaving me here alone all the time," grumbled Ferd. And Oscar usually flared up. "Okay, then. Next time you go, and I'll stay here. See if I begrudge you a little fun." But he knew, of course, that Ferd, tall, thin, pop-eyed Ferd, would never go. "Do you good," Oscar'd say, slapping his sternum. "Put hair on your chest." Ferd muttered that he had all the hair on his chest that he needed, and he glanced down covertly at his lower arms. They were thick with long black hair, though his upper arms were slick and white. It was already like that when he was in high school, and some of the others would laugh at him, call him Ferdy the Birdie. They knew it bothered him, but they did it anyway. How is it possible, he wondered then, he still did now, for people deliberately to hurt someone else who hadn't hurt them? How was it possible? He worried over other things all the time. The communists. And he shook his head over the newspaper. Oscar offered advice about the communists in two short words. Or it might be capital punishment. "Oh, what a terrible thing if an innocent man was to be executed," Ferd had moaned. Oscar would say, "That's the guy's tough luck." "Hand me the tire iron," Oscar said. And Ferd worried even about other people's minor concerns, like the time the couple came in with a tandem and the baby basket on it. Free air was all they took. Then the woman decided to change the diaper and one of the safety pins broke. Why are there never any safety pins? The woman fretted, rummaging here and rummaging there. There are never any safety pins. Ferd made sympathetic noises, went to see if he had any, but though he was sure there had been some in the office, he couldn't find them. So they drove off with one side of the diaper tied in a clumsy knot. At lunch, Ferd said it was too bad about the safety pins. Oscar dug his teeth into a sandwich, tugged, tore, chewed, and swallowed. Ferd liked to experiment with sandwich spreads. The one he liked most was cream cheese, olives, anchovy, and avocado mashed up with a little mayonnaise. Oscar always had the same pink luncheon meat. It must be difficult with a baby, Ferd nibbled. Not just traveling, but raising it. Oscar, stores in every block, and if you can't read, you can at least recognize them. Drugstore? Oh, yeah, to buy safety pins, you mean.
Yeah.
Oscar uncapped his beer, rinsed the first mouthful around. Always plenty of clothes hangers, though. Throw them out every month. Next month, same closet's full of them again. Now, what you gonna do in your spare time? What do you want? You want to invent a device which will make safety pins out of clothes hangers? Ferd nodded abstractly. But in my spare time, I'm working on the French racer. It was a beautiful machine. Light, low, slung, swift, red, shiny. You felt like a bird when you rode it. But good as it was, Ferd knew he could make it better. He showed it to everybody who came in the place till his interest slackened. Nature was his latest hobby, or rather reading about nature. Some kids had wandered by from the park one day with tin cans in which they had put salamanders and toads, and they proudly showed them to Ferd. After that, the work on the Red Racer slowed down, and he spent his spare time on natural history books. Mimicry, Ferd said to Oscar one day. A wonderful thing, mimicry. Oscar looked up interestedly from the bowling scores in the paper. Yeah, I seen Edie Adams on TV the other night doing her imitation of Marilyn Monroe. Boy, oh boy. Ferd was irritated, shook his head. Not that kind of mimicry. I mean how insects and arachnids will mimic the shapes of leaves and twigs and so on to escape being eaten by birds and other insects and arachnids. A scowl of disbelief passed over Oscar's face. You mean they changed? What are you giving me? Oh, it's true. Sometimes a mimicry is for aggressive purposes, though, like a South African turtle that looks like a rock, and so the fish swim up to it and then it catches them. Or that spider in Sumatra. When it lies on its back, it looks like a bird dropping. Catches butterflies that way. Oscar laughed a disgusted and incredulous noise. It died away as he turned back to the bowling scores. One hand groped at his pocket, came away scratched absently at the orange thicket under his shirt, and then went patting his hip pocket. Where's that pencil? He muttered and got up, stomped into the office, pulled open drawers. His loud cry of, "Hey!" brought Ferd into the tiny room. What's the matter? Oscar pointed to a drawer. Remember the time you claimed there were no safety pins here? Look, whole damn drawer is full of them. Ferd stared, scratched his head, said feebly that he was certain he'd looked there before. A contralto voice from outside asked, "Anybody here?" Oscar at once forgot the desk and its contents and called, "Be right with you." It was gone. Ferd followed him slowly. There was a young woman in the shop, a rather massively built young woman with muscular calves and a deep chest. She was pointing out the seat of her bicycle to Oscar, who was saying, "Uh-huh," and looking more at her than anything else. "It's just a little too far forward." "Uh-huh." "As you can see, a wrench is all I need." "Uh-huh." "Forget my tools." Oscar repeated, "Uh-huh," automatically, and then snapped to. "Fix it in a jiffy," he said, and despite her insistence that she could do it herself, he did fix it. Though not quite in a jiffy. He refused money, and he prolonged the conversation as long as he could. "Well, thank you," the young woman said. "And now I've got to go." "The machine feel all right to you now?" "Perfectly, thanks." Tell you what, I'll just ride along with you a bit, just..." Pear-shaped notes of laughter lifted the young woman's bosom. "Oh, you couldn't keep up with me. My machine's a racer." The moment he saw Oscar's eyes flit to the corner, Ferd knew what he had in mind. He stepped forward. His cry of "No!" was drowned out by his partner's loud, "Well, I guess this racer here can keep up with yours." And the young woman giggled richly and said, well, they'd see about that. They were off. Oscar, ignoring Ferd's outstretched hand, jumped on the French bike and was gone. Ferd stood in the doorway, watching the two figures hunched over their handlebars vanish down the road into the park. He went slowly back inside. It was almost evening before Oscar returned, sweaty but smiling. Smiling broadly. Hey, what a babe, he cried. He wagged his head, he whistled, he made gestures, noises like escaping steam. Boy, oh boy, what an afternoon. Give me the bike, demanded Ferd. Oscar said, yeah, sure, and turned it over to him and went to wash. Ferd looked at the machine. The red enamel was covered with dust. There was mud splattered and dirt and bits of dried grass. It seemed soiled, degraded. It felt like a swift bird when he rode it. Oscar came out wet and beaming. He gave a cry of dismay and ran over. Stand away, said Ferd, gesturing with a knife. He slashed the tires, the seat cover again and again. Hey, are you crazy? Oscar yelled. You out of your mind, Ferd? Ferd, no, don't! Ferd cut the spokes, bent them, twisted them. He took the heaviest hammer and pounded the frame into shapelessness, and then he kept on pounding till his breath was gasping. You're not only crazy, you're rotten jealous, Ferd. You can go to hell. He stomped away. Ferd, feeling sick and stiff, locked up, went slowly home. He had no taste for reading, turned out the light, and fell into bed, where he lay awake for hours, listening to the rustling noises of the night and thinking out twisted thoughts. They didn't speak to each other for days after that, except for the necessities of the work. The wreckage of the French racer lay behind the shop. For about 2 weeks, neither wanted to go out back, where he'd have to see it. One morning, Ferd arrived to be greeted by his partner, who began to shake his head in astonishment even before he started speaking. How did you do it? How did you do it, Ferd? Jeez, what a beautiful job. I gotta hand it to you, man. No more hard feelings, huh, Ferd? Ferd took his hand. Sure, sure, but what are you talking about? Oscar let him out back. There was the red racer, all in one piece. Not a mark or scratch on it. Its enamel bright as ever. Ferd gaped. He squatted down and examined it. It was. Every change, every improvement he had made, all there. He straightened up slowly. Regeneration. Huh? What'd you say? Oscar asked. Then, hey, man, you're all white. What'd you do? Stay up all night and didn't get no sleep? Come on in, sit down. But, hey, I still don't see how you did it. Inside, Ferd sat down. He wet his lips. He said, Oscar, listen. Yeah? Oscar, you know what regeneration is? No, listen. Some kinds of lizards, you grab them by the tail breaks off, and they grow a new one. If a lobster loses a claw, it regenerates another one. And some kinds of worms and hydras and starfish, you cut them into pieces. Each piece will grow back the missing parts. Salamanders can regenerate lost hands. Frogs can grow legs back. No kidding, Ferd, but I mean nature. Very interesting, but to get back to the bike now, how did you manage to fix it so good? I never touched it, Oscar. It regenerated like a newt or a lobster. Oscar considered this. He lowered his head, looked up at Ferd from under his eyebrows. Oh, well, now, Ferd, look. How come all broken bikes don't do that? Well, this isn't an ordinary bike. I mean, it isn't a real bike. Catching Oscar's look, he said. Well, it's true. That changed Oscar's attitude from bafflement to incredulity. He got up. So, for the sake of argument, let's say all that stuff, you know, about the bugs and eels or whatever the hell you're talking about is true. But, Ferd, they're alive. A bike isn't. He looked down triumphantly. Ferd shook his leg from side to side and looked at it. A crystal isn't either, Oscar, but a broken crystal can regenerate itself if the conditions are right. Go see if the safety pins are still in the desk. Please, Oscar? He listened as Oscar, muttering, pulled the desk drawers out, rummaged in them, slammed them shut, cramped back. Nah, all gone. Yeah, like that lady said that time, and you said, there never are any safety pins when you want them. They disappear. Ferd, what? Chauffeur jerked open the closet door and jumped back as a shoal of clothes hangers clattered out.
And like you say,
Ferd said with a twist of his mouth. On the other hand, there are always plenty of clothes hangers. Oscar, there weren't any here before. Oscar shrugged. I don't see what you're getting at. But anybody could have got in here and took the pins and left the hangers. I could have. I didn't. Or you could have. Maybe you walked in your sleep, Ferd, and done it. You better see a doctor. Jesus, you look rotten. Ferd went back and sat down, put his head in his hands. I feel rotten. I'm scared, Oscar. I'm scared of what? I'll tell you, like I explained before, about how things remember that live in the wild places that mimic other things there, twigs, leaves, toads that look like rocks. Well, suppose there are things that live in people, places, cities, houses. These things could imitate other kinds of things you find in people, places.
People, places, for Christ's sake.
Look, maybe they're a different kind of life form, Oscar. Maybe they get their nourishment out of the elements in the air. You know what safety pins are. And these are other kinds of them. Oscar, the safety pins are the pupa forms, and then, like, they hatch into the larval forms, which look just like coat hangers. They feel like them, even, but they're not. Oscar, they're not. Not really, not. He began to cry into his hands. Oscar looked at him. He shook his head. After a minute, Ferd controlled himself somewhat. He snuffled. All these bicycles the cops find, and they hold them waiting for owners to show up, and then we buy them at the sale because no owners show up because there aren't any. And the same with the ones the kids are always trying to sell us. And they say they just found them, and they really did, because they were never made in a factory. They grew. They grow. You smash them and throw them away, they regenerate. Oscar turned to someone who wasn't there and waggled his head. Oh, boy. Ferd, you mean one day there's a safety pin and the next day instead there's a coat hanger? Ferd said, one day there's a cocoon, the next day there's a moth, one day there's an egg, the next day there's a chicken, but with these it doesn't happen in the open daytime where you can see it. But at night, Oscar, at night you can hear it happening, all the little noises in the nighttime, Oscar. Then, how come we ain't up to our belly buttons and bikes, Ferd? If I had a bike for every coat hanger. But Ferd had considered that, too. If every codfish egg, he explained, or every oyster spawn grew to maturity, a man could walk across the ocean on the backs of all the codfish or oysters there'd be. So many died, so many were eaten by predatory creatures that nature had to produce a maximum in order to allow a minimum to arrive at maturity. And Oscar's question was, then who eats the coat hangers? Bird's eyes focused through wall, buildings, park, and more buildings to the horizon. You gotta get the picture. I'm not talking about real pins or hangers. I got a name for the others. False friends, I called them. Oscar, in high school French, we had to watch out for French words that looked like English words, but really were different. Vos amis, they called them. False friends. Pseudo pins, pseudo hangers. Who eats them? Oscar, I don't know for sure. Pseudo vacuum cleaners, maybe. Oscar, with a loud groan, slapped his hands against his thighs. Ferd, God, you know what's the trouble with you? You talk about oysters, but you forgot what they're good for. You forgot there's two kinds of people in the world. Close up those books, those bug books, and those French books. Get out, mingle, meet people, soak up some brew. You know what, Ferd, the next time Norma, that's a woman's name with a racing bike, the next time she comes in here, you take the Red Racer and you go out in the woods with her. I won't mind, and I don't think she will either. Not too much. But Ferd said no. He didn't want to touch the Red Racer again. He was afraid of it. At this, Oscar pulled him to his feet, dragged him protestingly out to the back, and forced him to get on the French machine. Only way to conquer your fear of it, Ferd. Ferd started off, white-faced, wobbling, and in a moment was on the ground, rolling, thrashing, screaming. Oscar pulled him away from the machine.
It threw me. It tried to kill me. Look, blood.
His partner said it was a bump that threw him. It was his own fear. The blood, a broken spoke, grazed his cheek. And he insisted Ferd get on the bicycle again to conquer his fear. But Ferd had grown hysterical. He shouted that no man was safe, that mankind had to be warned. It took Oscar a long time to pacify him and to get him home and into bed. He didn't tell all this to Mr. Watney, of course. He merely said that his partner had gotten fed up with the business. It don't pay to worry and try to change the world, you know. I always say, take things the way they are if you can't let them join them. Mr. Watney said that was his philosophy, too. He asked how things were since. Well, not too bad. I'm engaged, you know. Name's Norma. She's crazy about bicycles. Everything considered, things aren't bad at all. There's more work, yeah, but I can do things all my own way, so... Mr. Watney nodded. He glanced around the shop.
I see they're still making drop frame bikes. Oh, so many women wearing slacks, I wonder why they bother.
Oscar said, well, I don't know. I kind of like it that way. Ever stop to think that bicycles are like people? I mean, of all the machines in the world, only bikes come male and female. Mr. Watney gave a little giggle and said, that was right. He had never thought of it like that before. And then Oscar asked if Mr. Watney had anything in particular in mind, not that he wasn't always welcome.
Well, I wanted to look over what you got, Oscar. My boy's birthday's coming up, and...
Oscar nodded sagely.
Well, here's a job which you can't get in any other place but right here, Mr. Watney. Especially the house. Combines the best features of the French racer and the American standard, but it's made right here, and it comes in three models. Junior, intermediate, regular. Beautiful, isn't it?
Mr. Watney observed that, well, that just might be the ticket, he asked.
By the way, what's become of the French racer, the red one that used to be in here?
Oscar's face twitched. Then it grew bland and innocent, and he leaned over and nudged his customer.
Oh, that one. Oh, old Frenchie. Why, I put him out to stud.
And they laughed. And they laughed. And after they told a few more stories, they concluded the sale. And they had a few beers. And they laughed some more. And then they said what a shame it was about poor Ferd. Poor old Ferd. Who had been found in his own closet with an unraveled coat hanger coiled tightly around his neck. Story's called O'er All the Seas with Oysters. It's by Avram Davidson. It appears in the book The Hugo Winners, Volume 1, which is edited by Isaac Asimov. This is Michael Hansen speaking. Technical production for MindWebs by Leslie Hilsenhoff. MindWebs comes to you from WHA Radio in Madison, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.